Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsive day for the 25th of Iyar. With thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jack Abramowitz, and to David Hochhauser for their help in putting the Shirim online. We are going to today get to learn from Rabbi Yitzchak Kohen Inspector in Shut Ein Yitzchak. Let's remember, Rabbi Yitzchak Kohen Inspector, the end of the 19th century, was one of the premier poskim. I often don't get a chance to learn from him because much of what he spends his time on, you know, when I come across the Chavot, very often it's about how to spell this word or that word in a get and whatever. Technical issues that aren't so easily conveyed in a shir. But today, we have the opportunity to look at Shut Ein Yitzchak Chelek Aleph, Evan Ezer, Simon, Nun Zayin, the 57th responsum in the first part in the Evan Ezer section. Now, this responsum actually is an example. It's from the 25th of Iyar of Tafresh Chavav of 1866. It's an example of where the response is clear sort of from the beginning. So the actual response to the tshuva, to the question, is going to be clear to everybody, and that's not going to be the issue. The issue is that along the way, the reasoning will show us many issues that come up in the context of Kiddushin. Now, Kiddushin is one of those interesting things. Marriage and wedding is one of those interesting things. There are a couple of examples that I have in my collection that I keep in my head of where we have created a halakhic reality in which we rarely come across any complicated problems, right? How do you create a valid wedding? You go to a wedding, right? You go into the chuppah, and the rabbi basically handles it. It basically comes out okay, and there's almost never questions. So there are questions, but very rarely. We've set it up so we don't come across these questions. But really, there are a lot of issues that come up, and so this tshuva of Yitzchak Inspector will give us an opportunity to review some issues that come up in terms of women's consent and how we define women's consent in Kiddushin. Because here's the case that came up, and the case that was sent to Rabbi Yitzchak Inspector. Woman, a young girl, however old she was, but she's an unmarried young woman. A man comes into the store, and he wants to buy a knife. And so they agree on a price, and whatever the price was, the numbers don't matter to us because it's in their currency, but they agree to the price. He says, well, I only have, let's say the price was $2. He says, I only have a $5 bill. He takes out, but it's in coins because it's going to be gold, silver. He takes out the $5 bill, the $5 gold coin, let's say the $5 coin, and she takes out the change, and she puts the change on the counter in front of her, and she puts the knife that he wants to buy on the counter in front of her, so she's like conducting a business transaction. He grabs her hand, and he puts the $5 coin in her hand, and he says to her, Hareat mekudeshet li b'matbeya zo kidamo shevi Yisrael. You are married to me with this coin, as is the custom among the Jewish people, basically, right? The formula that we say, that we today would say under a chuppah, in front of a rabbi, in front of a whole crowd, in front of witnesses, he says it in front of the people in the store, but there were two valid Jewish witnesses in the store, and they saw it, and then he runs away. Now, she says she took the money because he took the knife, right, and the other things that he had sold, that were sold, you know, a pack of gum, let's say, and she took the money for the knife. And so she says that she also didn't hear what he had to say, that she didn't hear that he said anything, because she was busy with non-Jews in the store, and there were other people in the store, so she was busy watching the store, and so she didn't hear what he had to say. And she also says that had she have heard, she wouldn't know what it meant, because she doesn't know what those words mean, right? So today, women are, most of us would say, thank God, more educated. And they know that when somebody says these words, they know what those words mean. But in the mid to late 1800s, it wasn't all clear that women knew Hebrew. So if she doesn't know Hebrew, and she doesn't know that these are the words you say at a wedding, then she doesn't know. And then what would that do to her consent? And what would that do to the question of whether we think that she's married? So the other rabbi who's writing to the Rav Yitzchak Kohen to check had thought that she didn't have to worry about this marriage. Meaning, if we think she's married, she'll need a get, and it gets all complicated, we all need all sorts of things. But this rabbi thought there was nothing here that you needed to worry about. And Rav Yitzchak Kohen Inspector agrees that you want to find reasons to let her not be married, because you want to be sure that people don't do this, right? It's clear from the case that she didn't intend to marry him to begin with, and you don't want women to find themselves in a situation where a guy tricks them into marriage, and they don't know what's going on, and all of a sudden, they need a get, and then they can't necessarily marry a kohen, and then all sorts of things are going on. So Rav Yitzchak Kohen Inspector find ways to agree and to confirm that she's never really married to this guy. So these are some of the examples. These are some of the answers that he gives. First of all, when she claims she didn't hear what he had to say, and she didn't understand it, the question is, do we believe her? Right? Might we have to worry that she's just thinking now because she realized the consequences of what she did, and she doesn't want to have to live with those consequences? The answer is no. We think, so he says, the Noda Behuda already said that he thinks we believe in these situations, that we're allowed to say, because remember, if she did understand it at the time, and she did accept it at the time, and now she's saying she didn't, she thinks she's okay, but the fact is that luckily she was married because she accepted it at the time, and now she's going to get out of it, and that would be a problem. So believing her is a big important question, is whether we do or don't believe her. So the Bakit said, he had a Ran that he thought in a Magen Mishnah, that he thought said something else, that we have to know that she didn't, that she understood, I'm sorry, not something else, that we have to know that she understood, because not all women understand Hebrew. So that would mean that the standard of proof is on the side that says that she did understand, that unless we know she understood what was going on, we don't assume she did. And that would support Yitzchak Gaon Inspector's claim, as the Noda Behuda did. And the Beis Shmuel quoted that opinion. Now, it's true that Beis Yosef and the Chalak and Mechokik disagreed, and they thought that we don't know that we can believe her, and then there would be a Suffolk Kedushin. Suffolk Kedushin because we don't know, because she's claiming she didn't understand, so that would be at best, or at worst, a Kedushin Suffolk. That's the most we can claim here. And then there's another issue. What happens when somebody gives money, when a man gives money to a woman for a certain purpose and then tries to convert it into another purpose? So the case in the Gemara in Kedushin is, a man says to a woman, take this money that I owe you, and then he says, at the time that he's giving it to you, you know what, I've changed my mind, I don't want it to be for the debt, I want it to be for Kedushin, I want it to be for you to consent to marry me, and she doesn't respond. So the Gemara says, Ratzta Mekudeshet, Lo Ratzta, if she didn't want to be Mekudeshet, so the Yitzchak Gaon assumes that it means the Ishtika, that she was quiet, that if he originally defined it as for the loan, she doesn't need to protest that she doesn't want it for Kedushin if he tries to change it. She just needs to not say anything, not accept it. So the Ran and the Rashba write that the Ran and the Rashba differentiate, here's the point, they differentiate between where he didn't mention it in this occasion where he gave her the money. He had once previously perhaps mentioned it, or there was just a loan, but he never mentioned it. So if he had never mentioned it, then she could say, I accepted it for... Then we would assume that she accepted it not for the loan, but that she accepted it for Kedushin. But if in that interaction he had mentioned the loan, so then she can claim, I never intended to accept it for Kedushin, I always intended to accept it for the loan. Because here's part of the problem from her perspective, is she's not always certain, she's not always allowed to believe and to assume that he's going to pay back the loan. She might not trust him so much to pay back the loan, and therefore, a lot of times she can accept it silently for the purpose of getting her money back. But if there was no mention of the loan in this particular event, in this particular interaction, so then the Ran and the Rashba held that she would have, the Rashba at least held, that she would have to have said something out loud about the fact that she's accepting it just for the loan and not for Kedushin. Otherwise, we have no reason to assign it to that. So the question at hand is, when there's a loan outstanding, when can she claim that she was doing it for the purpose of getting the loan, even if she doesn't say anything? And the Ran and the Rashba, their view is that it is in a situation where the loan has been mentioned at the time, in that interaction. Then she can assign it to the loan without having said anything. But when the loan is mentioned, she would have to say it at the time, otherwise we would assume she's accepted for Kedushin, because, and this is one of those interesting claims that is taken to be true, and then we have to figure out if it's still true in our time. So the Gemara assumes, and the Yitzchak Gaon Inspector is still assuming, that women tend to want to be married. And that's why there's a baseline assumption that women want to be married. And if we operate on that baseline assumption, then that means that in cases of doubt, we'll assume that the money was given to her and that she accepted it for the purpose of Kedushin, unless she says something else. And all of that is sort of at play underlying our discussions here. Coming back to our store place situation, though, since it was clear that he meant it, he had said that he was giving it to her for that which he owed her for the knife, so then there's no reason that she had to say anything for us to think that she's accepting for the knife. And even though he tries or thinks that he's changing it, so even though at the moment that he gave it to her, he tried to change his mind and say that it's for something else, for Kedushin, she doesn't have to worry about it, right? Where the interaction has been defined to be an interaction about him paying for her or repaying her for stuff that he owes her, she's not required to pay attention to anything that he said. The only time that she'd be required to actually say something, right, was where there's been no evidence in this particular interaction that it's about a debt, then we assume that it's about Kedushin. Other than that, she's okay and she doesn't have to worry about it. So that means in our case, at the least, we've created a sfeik sveika. In a sfeik sveika, we don't have to, a sfeik sveika, we're allowed to ignore it in halacha. We're allowed to say that's such a vanishing possibility that we're not obligated to pay attention to it. So what's the sfeik sveika? What's the double doubt? One doubt is sofek dilma lo shama klal. Maybe she didn't hear it all. If she didn't hear it all, then there's never been a consent on her part. And here's the important thing to remember that we're assuming here, that in Kiddushin, for all that, if you look at a Jewish wedding ceremony, it looks like the woman is completely passive. Her consent is absolutely required. Without her consent, there is no Kiddushin here. So in our case of the woman in the store, we need to know that there was consent there. So you go to a wedding hall, you've had a whole big wedding, that's part of why we know there's consent there. And then also she sticks out her finger and she accepts it. And the only reason he's giving her a ring is to get married to her, and he says the words. But here in the store, unless we know that she wants to be involved, that she's heard, then we clearly don't have any consent there. And then that's one suffix. And it's helped by that she says she doesn't understand those words anyway. Meaning, you said to me the words Harei HaMekudeshet, they have no idea of what Harei HaMekudeshet Li means, and therefore that would be all part of that one suffix. And then, even if that's not true, even if we don't believe her about that, we still have a suffix, because maybe the halacha is that even when, and this is a machloka, but even if the halacha is that even when the man changed his mind about the reason that he's giving this money to her, he started off saying that it was for a chov, and then for a loan, for a debt obligation of some sort, and he might say that it should be for Kiddushin, that she is not required to protest that, and she can simply accept the money and say that she was accepting it for the loan, for the payment that she was owed, and not for the Kiddushin. Adding support to that is, the Rav Yitzchak Hagaon Inspector says, there's also a difference that there's a difference between when the loan is tachat yad halove, then you might argue that she's not allowed to claim that she was taking it for a loan, because in the process of lending money to somebody, there's a certain amount of trust. So if she trusted him enough to lend him money, then we might say in halacha that the malve has trusted that love, trusted that borrower, and therefore we have to trust the borrower about what he was paying money back for in that situation. That would be true when there's a loan that she had extended to the borrower, to the man. But in our situation, that's not how the loan happened, and therefore there was no particular form of trust. And therefore, if he's going to pay her, and now he's going to try to claim that he is shifting the value, the reason of the payment, shifting the nature of the payment. So here, it's easily possible that everybody agrees with what he said, that everybody agrees, is what he's saying, that everybody agrees that since she never lent him the money, so therefore there's no reason to think that she trusted him. So the fact that he tried to define it as a payment for the as a kiddushin, as a form of marriage, would not mean anything, and she wouldn't have to pay attention to that or care about that. It's also true, another complication is that the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch all seem to understand that his ability to say Hareat Mekudeshet, that his ability to say that he's going to use this money for marriage's purposes, is only when he says it before she takes the money. But in our case, the money was already in her hands. He grabbed her hand, he put the money in it, and then he began talking. So then, once the money is no longer in his hands, then we can say he doesn't have the power to define it anymore, because it's no longer his money, and therefore, whatever words he says don't have that much relevance to us either. And there was also no action on her part of reception. Right? If the form of Kiddushin is, a man gives money to a woman for a purpose, then if the man gives money to the woman for a purpose, forgive money to a woman, and then later tries to define its purpose, he can't do that because there's been no act of reception from her part, and therefore you don't have a Kiddushin. So then the only thing that's left is a revisional inspector that would lead us to think that maybe we have to worry that there was a Kiddushin here, that it was that we have a Gemara in Kiddushin where Rav Huna says, the son of Rav Yoshua says that if a woman doesn't intend to accept the money, or she accepts it only as a begadol, let's say, or she doesn't want it for Kiddushin, then she should have thrown it away, and then she should have rejected it. Now, in our case, that's not such a great svara, because she claims she didn't hear about what was going on. So you would have thought that she wouldn't have been required to do that. Not only that, the Beit Shmuel has an opinion, says Rabbi Yitzchak Elkanan Spector, that the only time she's got to throw it away is if at the beginning of the interaction there was some kind of an agreement about Kiddushin, or they were bishadik, they were engaged. And that's what the Avni Miluim in Simon Mem Bet, Sif Katan Bet, says the name of the Marashach and the Maram Padua. So in our situation, though, since they weren't talking about marriage at all, nothing created an obligation on her to have to throw the money away. And the fact that she accepted the money didn't have to do anything with Kiddushin. It was because she thought he owed her money for the knife that she was selling. And therefore, again, when she took it, it wasn't really Kiddushin. Therefore, she doesn't have any reason why she has to throw it away. Not only that, even for those who think that she has to throw it away anyway, there are the Marit seems to think that you have to throw it away anyway. Here, it would seem to be that she has a good claim. Because she can say, that would pot to her, because she can say that she's accepting the money for the knife. And so we found that where one litigant is sort of in possession of money, and the other one is going to have to take him to court to get the money out, so there's a lower burden of proof on that person who was in that situation to say what they were taking the money for than if it's a question of just not needing to pay him back. So here, since if she throws this money away, he's the one who was in possession of the money. He's taking a knife. She's going to need the money from him. But since she needs money from him, that'll be a question of taking him to court and saying, you didn't pay me for the knife. I need to get the knife back. I need the money back. So therefore, when the money does come to her, she doesn't have as much of a requirement to throw the money away, even if that's what's necessary to prove it's not for Kiddushin. But here, if you make her do that, he could grab the money and walk away and she'll be out the money. And therefore, or he could deny that they ever did anything. He could say, she threw the money back at me, and therefore I just wanted the money, and I just took my money back. So therefore, because of all that, she has more of a reason that she's allowed to say, I was keeping the money to avoid having to go to court about the issue of payment for the knife. Because, you know, one thing he could do, theoretically, is he could say, after she throws the money away, he could take the money and the knife and say, the Kiddushin thing, that was just a joke, but she threw the money back at me, so apparently she doesn't want the money, so she gave me the knife. If she doesn't want the money, great, I have the money, and that's it. And therefore, that would support her claim that she didn't want to throw the money away because she had to worry about it. Then Rabbi Yitzchak Elkanan throws in the words, V'yesh l'ha'arich b'zeh ha'svara, meaning that there's a lot more to be said about this, meaning when we say that the woman doesn't have to throw the money away or does have to throw the money away, there are apparently many more cases like that one would have to think about, but he's not getting to them now because they're not relevant to his particular situation right now. But that whole question of the role a woman's acceptance of money plays and when she has to demonstrate her lack of consent, that apparently is a more complicated issue than Rav Yitzchak Elkanan has time to deal with right here and right now. Not only that whole svara of ibayle lemishdinu, you have to throw it away, is actually a debate in the Gemara. We saw Rav Huna's view that you did have to use it, that you did have to throw it away, but Rav Achai seemed to think that you didn't. So now, halacha, we say she's a suffix mikudesh in that situation. If she didn't throw the money away, but she claims she didn't accept it for the purposes of Kiddushin, it's not that we say she's definitely mikudesh, we say she's a suffix mikudesh. So in our situation now, that means we have three sveikot. Maybe she didn't hear or understand. If you say she heard or understood, maybe he doesn't have the right or the ability to redefine it as Kiddushin. And maybe even if it's not Kiddushin, or maybe also it's not Kiddushin, if she accepted it silently, even if she didn't throw it away. And then add to that, he only started saying Harayim Mekudeshetli after he put the money in her hand. And so even if it's B'toch Kedei Dibor, let's remember B'toch Kedei Dibor is where you say something very soon after something else. And in some areas of halacha, that's allowed to define what just came before. Even though it's afterwards, but it's so close to afterwards, there's sort of, in some cases, in halacha, an open window. So here you might have thought there's an open window, but the answer is that we hold, the Taz holds in Evan Ezer, that once he's given her the item, then he can't change his mind about anything. So once he's given her the item, even Toka Dedibur, he can't then try to say it's about Kiddushin. So that adds to our belief that she's not implicated in this Kiddushin, and that's there's a bright thing Kiddushin that seems to say that as well, that after Matan Mold, even if she wanted to be for Kiddushin, it's not for Kiddushin, because it has to be for Kiddushin at the time of the handing it over. But, and then there are those who hold it's not true. There are those who hold that within a Tov K'dei Dibur, you can, in fact, change it into Kiddushin, but that wouldn't be true here because she doesn't know that halacha, right? That comes up now, an interesting general issue. When you have a debate among the authorities, among the Qaza, among Poskim, among rabbinic decisors, halachic decisors, so who's she bound by? Is she bound by all opinions? What if she doesn't know one of the opinions? She assumes that the halacha is another way, and can she just claim she thought the halacha was another way? So the shach happens to have said something like that, where there's a debate among authorities, you can say, that you can say that she was holding by what we consider a rejected opinion, but as long as it was a valid opinion, it's an opinion out there in the books, that she's allowed to claim that she held by that. So therefore, especially since we do women know the ins and outs of halacha, because especially in their time, women weren't generally educating these things. So the fact that there's a, you know, a this on the books or a that on the books, okay, so that's all reasons to say she's not implicated. She's not bound by this marriage. Another reason that you could say that is the Kaimbalan im lo amar kin si sel azusha ni chayav lach el kin si sel estama nekudeshet v'ena yichala lomar lifi rom. Then we have a general principle. Let's say the man gives her money, but he owed her money. So we don't think that she can say, I was taking it for repayment of the loan, if he just said, I'm giving you money. It's only when he said, I'm going to pay it, giving it to you for payment of the money, that she can then claim that's what she was taking it for. And the Rashba in Kiddushin, on that page in Kiddushin, Yud Gimel, says that since all women want to be Mikudeshet, since all women want to be married, therefore, without any evidence otherwise, we assume that the money's for Kiddushin. So, what that were really true, if we took that all the way to the conclusion that seems to extend from it, why wouldn't it be, and this is a halacha that the Brit Chachamim is assuming is true, why would it be that, so why is it that if he grabs money from her, and they have not previously agreed to be married to each other, he grabs money from her, and then he gives it back to her as Kiddushin. So why doesn't that work then? Right? If we're going to be so sure, if the Rosh was saying we're so sure that that women want to be married, then what does it matter that he stole it from her? So you have to say, says the court inspector, that there's a difference, that when he stole the money from her, then she never knew that there's no ownership of money, there's no owing of money, that she established a loan of any sort with her. But where she never established any kind of a loan with him, he just stole it from her, then we're more sure that she accepted it just for Piron, that she accepted to get her money back. Meaning, the Ritzchon inspector is saying that the Rashba's, you can take the Rashba too far, you have to make sure not to. When the Rashba says, women clearly want to be married, and therefore they'll accept money, even if money's owed to them, they'll accept money for the purpose of Kiddushin rather than for the Piron, that's when there's an established loan of some sort. There's an established money that he owes her, but where he stole it from her, so there you wouldn't say such a thing because she doesn't have any, she never established a loan of any sort, and she just wants to get her money back because he stole the money from her. So therefore, there would be no reason for her to do that. If that's true, and the Lechem Mishnah, he says he found it in the Lechem Mishnah as well, that says that's true. If it's true that she's going to take money, whether it was stolen from her, just as far as getting her money back. And there we don't say that she's trusted him enough and so much that she's willing to take it for Kiddushin and assume she'll get the money back later. Then, and that would be true, by the way, even if what he said to her was, I'm not giving this for the gezel, I'm not giving this for the return of what you stole from me, doesn't matter because she's still clearly taking it back for the purpose of getting her money back, and what he says doesn't matter because he's a thief and he stole it from her, and if he's the kind of guy who would steal from her, she has no idea when she would get money back, and since she has no idea when she'll get it back, then certainly she's allowed to claim she was taking it back for the purpose of Kiddushin and not for anything else. Sorry, she was taking it back for the purpose of getting her money back and for her stolen money back and not for anything else. And that's therefore a completely different case than when she established a loan relationship with him of some sort. Where she established a loan relationship with him, that would be a whole different kind of a thing. And this is true. Let me stress that even if he said, "I'm not giving it back for the gzela," she can say, "I don't care what you said. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you said. I don't trust you to give me money back, so I'm taking my money back for this purpose." And the Rita Kolon inspector says, that'll be true even for a case where the guy stole something, turned it into money, and then turned it back into something else. Let's say he stole a ring, sold the ring, got money, bought another ring. So the reason why that's relevant is because then this item that he's giving her now is actually his halachically. This has to do with the fact that people who own, who steal things can eventually become the owners of things like that, if not that exact thing. So in this situation, you could have argued, so the Chok of Chokek writes about this discussion, you could have argued that it's enough kids that it'll count as Kiddushin, and she can't say she was just taking it back because it's not really hers. It's a debt that he owes her now. We've already said, in cases of debt, she'd have to explicitly say it, or he'd have to explicitly say, I'm giving you for the debt, and otherwise we'll assume that she's Mekudeshet. But the Rabbi Yochanan Spector says it's clear to him that in a case like this, she's not Mekudeshet, because once he originally gets an item through theft, through stealing, then she can no longer be assumed to be accepting it for anything other than repayment of what was owed to her. And that's something that the Gemara Kiddushin in Yud Gimel also talks about, wherever we can say that she has a worry, that she has a worry that she won't get the money back, that will say that she didn't throw away the Kiddushin, and that's why, because she'll be getting the money back, that we can trust that svara, that idea, and that's what, so too in the case of things that were stolen from her. And therefore, in our case, comes back to our case now, she didn't want to sell him the knife, and she didn't want to sell the knife on credit, right? That's why she was asking for cash. There was no idea of credit, and therefore, she's never shown any trust of him, and therefore, there's no reason to think that she trusted him for anything, and therefore, the money was taken for that loan and not that. So those are all the reasons the resulting inspector gives for why she's not actually married to him. And along the way, he's shown us many of the reasons of the issues that come up with consent and with the question of construing the money that comes to a woman in Kiddushin. In most marriages that we have today, we don't even get to those kinds of questions, but it shows that these are things that have to be established. It has to be established she's accepting the money for the purpose of Kiddushin. There might be a general assumption that she's doing that, but where it's not clear, or where there's reasons to think she's doing it for some other reason, that's where we get into the kinds of issues that we had with our case today, and where it's a loan, he says he's paying back for the loan, she has the right to claim that's what she was taking it for, or where he stole something from her, so the resulting inspector, if he stole something from her, that also would be an example of where she doesn't have to make any real claim to say that she wasn't accepting it for Kiddushin, as we had in our situation where he gave her the money for a knife that she was clearly not willing to loan him money for, and therefore she could clearly claim that she was taking money for the purpose of getting paid for the knife, letting her say that she was never married to this guy, such that he can't get away with trying to sort of steal her in marriage, and she is free to continue living her life. And that is a responsive day for Yitzchak Pachter for the 25th of Iyar. This is Gideon Rothstein, with thanks to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz, and to David Hochhauser. Have a great day.